You're listening to WWBC Coco, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Coco, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Cocoa, Florida. What a beautiful day. We are heard on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere. It's amazing how many people have called us to ask us what our call-in letters are. And how to listen online.
That's right. So listening online is very easy. You go to 1510WWBC and you can hit that listen live button. Or if you'd like to hear any of our archive shows, for right now, we're asking everybody to go to our website, which is cedamediainc.com, and all the shows are up usually within 24 hours after the show airs. We also post everything on our Facebook pages and all of the social media, not just Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, but also Sita Media Inc., and also on Sita's personal page. And today's no different, Sita. 14 years worth of fantastic guests. We've got some great conversation going to happen today, too, with our two call-in guests.
Yeah, it feels kind of nice to have the two call-ins today because we can have a little conversation before the show with Danny and you and I about whatever's going on. And seems as though we're all talking about mangoes this morning.
And beautiful mangoes that they are.
Oh my God, you're
but
so
I tell you, the squirrels and everybody are getting, like, you know, all the animal life is eating all the mangoes lately. So everybody's trying to pick them quicker.
Right. And you saw how my husband dragged that carpet out and put it on the pavers. So, because what was happening, the mangoes are falling off the tree. And when they hit the pavers, they crack. So all of a sudden,
the pavers cracked
home,
or the
mangoes?
Oh, the mangoes cracked.
Yeah, the pavers cracked.
I was that, like, geez, those are some heavy pranks.
So today, as usual, we have two awesome guests today, Ellen. We'll talk about our mangoes after.
That's right.
For our guests who are tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends today, we have two call-in guests today. We have Dr. Brian Hoflinger, an MD, who's calling in from Ohio. My daughter Jasmine had posted something on her Facebook about this wonderful doctor and his wife who lost their child, Brian. And it really went to my heart because, you know, we've had neighbors in Tortoise Island whose children died in car accidents from drunk driving, kids who snuck out in the middle of the night, of course. And so he's calling in first. And then our second guest, we have a young lady who's calling in to talk about her book. And we'll talk to her. Her name is, I know you have her name there, Miss Ellen. We'll get in a little bit.
Yep, yep.
She's calling to talk about the character of Theopatra. It's about a mouse, and it's going to be a wonderful segment with her afterwards. So I think Doctor is on the phone, and we'll go right to him because he's got limited time, and we're so grateful that he's taken the time off his busy practice to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. So Dr. Hoflinger, thank you for taking the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Oh, my pleasure. Can you hear me okay?
You know what? You sound so clear. It sounds as though you're sitting right next to us here in studio. So,
nice.
So I wanted to tell you, my children have been a big fan of yours before I saw your post that my daughter posted on Facebook, and we were all speaking about you and what a terrific human being you are to take your loss and the tragedy of losing your son and try to make a difference and help other people. So thank you so much for that, you and your beautiful wife.
Yeah, thank you.
So Doctor, tell our listeners a little bit what happened to Brian. I know he went out with friends, and I do know that you had given him all the rules and regulations about driving, drinking and driving, passengers in his car, and everything else.
Yeah.
But things happen, and it's heartbreaking, but you are taking that tragedy and trying to help us. So talk to us a little bit about that night.
Yeah, well, it's kids will do what kids want to do, I've learned, and you can talk to them as much as you want. It just doesn't seem to get through sometimes, but he he and a few friends went to a liquor store on a Friday afternoon before a basketball game, and they bought a bottle of vodka, and they went to a party after the basketball game at a parent's house that we had known, and people were drinking vodka, and it was in the basement. And at some point, Brian, later in the evening, got hold of his keys, and apparently some of the kids tried to take the keys away, but he got the keys, went up into his car, and then, you know, we'll never know what really happened, but it sounds like they tried to stop him from getting in the car, but he got in his car, and he drove away, and about 10 minutes later, around midnight, he hit a tree head-on a mile from our house, and I was the neurosurgeon on call that night for the hospitals where he went, and they initially, a neighbor of ours had called and said they thought Brian had been in a car accident because they saw his car had hit a tree, and the fire department was there and the police department, and so our neighbor said he went to the hospital, and the initial hospital he went to was a level 3 trauma, which is very low level, so I thought he broke his leg or something. And when I called that hospital, you know, I said, "Is my son Brian there?" And no one would really tell me anything, and I go to the hospital all the time, so I said, "This is Dr. Heflinger, can you please tell me what's happened to my son?" And they said that he's been transferred to Toledo Hospital, which is a level 1 trauma for life-threatening injuries. And so, you know, that's when we knew our life was forever to change, because I knew if Brian went to the level 1 trauma center that he was severely injured or probably dead. But that's how simple it can happen. It's just one night of drinking, you know, and you know, once you start drinking, I think the alcohol is calling the shots. It's not so much you calling the shots anymore.
Yes. And doctor, you are a neurosurgeon in Toledo, Ohio, and your wife is a retired forensic pathologist.
So when
people say that he, you know, we all say, you know, accountability and responsibility. It wasn't like Brian was stupid at all. I mean, Brian had a GPA of 4.5, and his ATC scores was 32. It was just a one-time thing, bad judgment at that moment.
Well, and that's the problem
and
sometimes
I think that's
in
our
a neighborhood.
Big thing is we try to tell parents that it can happen to anybody. I mean, you know, Brian heard all the stories that I would talk about coming home about people that have been injured from drinking and driving, and his mom would do the autopsies on those people, and he very well knew what can happen, but he did it. And so it really can happen to anybody. You can never be naive. I mean, we were kind of naive about the whole thing of kids in high school and drinking. And so I think what we try to do is just open the eyes to parents out there who have teenagers to just keep it in the back of your mind that the kids are out there doing that. Even if they say they're not, a lot of them are still doing it.
Yeah. Well, and the problem, too, is especially like with a neighborhood, you said it happened less than a mile from your house. And that and people get, you know, oh, I'm taking back streets. I'm only doing 35 miles an hour. And somehow the rationalization, again, the alcohol-induced rationalization becomes such that you don't realize that even at 35 or 40 miles an hour that bad things can happen.
That's right.
But you know, it's just the worst feeling in your life to have have that happen. It just it takes a part of you away that you never gain back. And I just, if you can prevent one or two people from having to go through that pain, it's well worth what we're doing.
Right, and that's what good people do, right? We take our pain and our loss, and we turn it into something where we can help either other people. So doctor, the loss of a child, sometimes it strengthens a family, and sometimes it can ruin a family. But from what I'm seeing with you, and I'm reading about you and your lovely wife, this has strengthened your family, and it has strengthened your faith. And also for all of us in your community, we're watching that you have taken this and it's strengthened yourself. Talk to us a little bit about the trauma and what the family went through.
Yeah. Well, I remember, so my, you know, everybody told us to go to counseling, and my wife and I went to counseling like a week or two into it, and it was one of the worst experiences of our life. And, you know, the counselor told us, you know, that 80% of couples get divorced after something like this. And I think for us, I mean, we just wanted, I couldn't let my son die and not have something good come out of it. And so it's been hard on our family, and I think it was hard on our kids. You know, we put a lot of focus on Brian in the early years because he died 10 years ago, and my wife and I would talk to high schools all over the place and spend a lot of time. And I think our kids got shortchanged a little bit through those years because we had such a focus on Brian and trying to make something of his death. So it's been hard, but I think we've all come back full circle, and I think everybody's very healthy and doing well. But it's something that you have to do as a family. There's just no doubt about it. I mean, the kids get involved. They often go do talks with us, and it has strengthened us as a family. And I think it's a purpose in your family that we all wanted to do to respect Brian's life, because he was a good kid that made a bad decision, and we just wanted to do something positive with it.
Yeah, and a lot of people, they have ways of coping, because parents do have to bounce back. You still have to pay your mortgages and take care of the children you have, and God knows we have student loans and health insurance, and in your case, doctor, you had your practice. What did you do to bounce back, to recover? Because you never really recover from the loss of a child, but you have to keep going.
You just learn to deal with it. I mean, for me, it was, I had to show my kids an example, right? I mean, you have to be an example for your kids. I can't just quit my job or start drinking or, lose focus. And so I think part of what I did is just get back in the work, within 2 or 3 weeks I was back to work, and just make an example for the kids. Life goes on, and bad things happen in life, and I've seen that my whole career, and my wife has seen it in her career, and you just have to deal with those things and move on the best you can, and that's what we've done.
Yeah, and you have to...
easy to say. I mean, it's easy to say, and everybody's different. I know everybody's tragedies are different, so I don't belittle anybody else's tragedy. I just know with our tragedy, that's how we dealt with it, was trying to turn, our tragedy into hope for others and a positive impact on others, and that's how we survived and came out of this.
Right. So, and then you have to make a sense of connection as well with your wife and the children at home, you find that faith played a part in that, finding that connection between the family and keeping the family together?
It did, but it was harder. We went to church every Sunday with Brian and the whole family, and it was hard afterwards, because when something like this happens, you question your faith, right?
I mean, yes.
It makes you question why would something like this happen, and so I don't know, that's a tough one to answer. I mean, we've had trouble on and off through the years with faith, but I think we just we just solidified as a family, as a unit, more than anything, and our faith in ourselves as a family.
Yeah. And somebody texted us, and a friend of mine was saying, well, when you're in the car, whether you're an adult or child, we should all remember no drinking or drugs, no distractions, no speeding, limit extra passengers, and if you get drowsy, pull over. But did he have passengers in the car, or was he alone?
No, we thank to God every day he did not. He was alone, so he died alone.
Yeah, and I like what you said. Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
No, so he was alone. So do you know if any of his friends had tried to stop him and say, hey, let's call an Uber or let's call your parents? I mean, did anyone see him leave and say, Brian just doesn't look right? And because I would think that if he was with his friends, someone should have tried to stop him.
And I think they did. I mean, again, we will never know what happened in that basement that night, but I think it sounds like a lot of the people there did try to stop him. But when you're drunk and you're belligerent, and I think he just ran up into his car, and even somebody stood in front of his car, but wasn't gonna take a chance on Brian hitting him, so he just moved out of the way. So it's nobody's fault. I think the kids did what they could, but it's one of those things that you never think is going to happen. I mean, I don't think any of those kids at the party probably ever thought that he would leave and hit a tree, because people drive drunk all the time. But there's a certain number of people who get unlucky and something bad happens, And I just think, when people drink, I did a TikTok on it about how alcohol is metabolized. You metabolize alcohol so slow. And I think kids at a party, when they're doing shots and they build up 5 shots of alcohol in their bloodstream within an hour, it takes 5 hours to burn that off no matter what they do. They can drink coffee or stop drinking or whatever they want to do, but that 5 ounces of alcohol in their system is going to last for 5 hours. So, kids, drive home an hour or two after they're done drinking, but they'll be drunk, for 3 or 4 more hours after that, and they don't realize that.
Yeah, so, and Ellen just looked at the video, actually.
I did, and there's another piece to it, too, although this was a house party, it sounds like. I know that a lot of servers go through and bartenders go through some type of training, especially about what your video was about. And it talks, the training, I know that because I've taken it myself. The training talks about, trying to feed the person protein and, specific things that try and help it metabolize faster.
Well,
but obviously,
so what happens is it won't help it metabolize. So you only metabolize 1 ounce per hour, no matter what, through your liver. The other things, protein and that, just slows the absorption of alcohol. So you know, if you start eating protein, you continue to drink, you might slow the absorption of alcohol into the bloodstream. But I'm saying once it's in the bloodstream, you know, right. Say somebody hasn't eaten, they have an empty stomach, they put 5 ounces into their bloodstream, there's no other way to stop that, you know, from metabolizing 1 ounce per hour. You can't change that.
Right, so that's the time part.
It's the time part, yeah.
So, Doctor, you've also written a book, and you also have a website, and I think your main goal is for all of us to recognize the dangers of teen drinking and driving, and that the teen drivers are at much greater risk of crashing after drinking alcohol than adult drivers, because statistics have shown that 70% of all teenagers admit to drinking alcohol, and one in 10 teens in high school drinks and drive, and also that every 15 minutes a teenager can die from drunk driving. I've been reading this on, and I'm like, I'm amazed that we don't have more people speaking out, because as you said earlier, there are people that drink and drive, and it is parents who are doing it with their children or with their friends or neighbors and getting behind a wheel. So how do we, Danny, our producer's nodding his head, affirmative, how do we get more people to understand that if you go to a bar, you're setting the example if you're there with your kids?
I think the biggest thing that we've had success with is all these things that we've done through the years and reached all these millions and millions of people is that, you know, have parents open up conversations with their kids about drinking, because you can't pretend it doesn't happen. I hope parents would sit down with their kids when they become teenagers and say, you know, I know you're going to be forced, you know, in situations where there's going to be alcohol, or you may be drinking alcohol, and let's sit down and talk about this. Let's just assume it's going to happen, and let's talk about what can we do. If you need a ride, call an Uber or call us. You know, I mean, I would have been happy to go pick Brian up if he would have called me. But kids are worried about the consequences. So if you talk to the parents ahead of time and have that all laid out, you know, that's been a big success, I think, for us, is opening up a dialogue between the kids and the parents. And, you know, bartenders, we've talked to several groups of people that sell alcohol to try to tell Brian's story. And, I mean, classes for them is important, because, you know, to keep serving somebody at a bar when they're already, you know, drunk is a big no-no. But, I mean, the world's not perfect. All you can do is, I think when Brian died, my wife and I thought we'd change the world and we would stop underage drinking. And we learned quickly it's not going to stop, because alcohol is such a big part of our culture, and adults drink as well. And so I think we just need to educate kids, talk to them, have the parents talk to their kids. I mean, that's the best you can do.
Yeah, you know? And I think reminding the teenagers that it's never safe to drive a car with someone who has been drinking alcohol or even using drugs.
Yeah.
Or the driver themselves. Yeah. Constant reminders. And, you know, kids, teenagers think you're nagging them. They think you're being this repetitive parrot. I've had teenagers in my home, four children we've had, and they would look at you like you have 10 heads when you're trying to educate them. But I think the trick is to educate their friends, so maybe the friends will tell them, because their friends have such an influence over them.
Yeah, I mean, if they could ever feel the pain that we went through when Brian died, if they had one of their brothers or sisters or mom and dad died, you don't really understand it, right, until it hits home. And it's like anything in life. Until it affects you, you don't take it seriously. So, you know, when I wrote my book, it's a very emotional book, but I was trying to get people to feel that pain. Because if they can feel the pain that we went through, it just makes a little bit more impact on them, I think, to see that, you know, it's such a silly thing to lose your life. Or what if you are driving the car and you kill somebody, and then you kill that person, but then you go to jail for 20 years and you've ruined your life too. So there's other ramifications of drinking and driving, not just hurting yourself, but hurting others, getting in legal trouble, losing your license, you know.
Basically,
like
people, if you drink, even if it's one drink, I think, just stay off the road. Or at least give yourself 4 to 5 hours for that one drink to get out of your system. Because in your video...
Well, and I did a... Did you see the video? Did you see the video where I started drinking wine to see how many glasses of wine it takes to get the legal limit?
Yeah, I saw it.
And
talk to our listeners, a little bit about the binge drinking and the standard drink.
Yeah, well, I did a video on binge drinking. So I went down our basement. Every half an hour, I had a 5-ounce glass of wine. And I wanted to see how quickly it would take to get to the legal limit. And so it took me 4 glasses of wine. I was just under legal limit. But you could tell when I was videotaping myself, I was drunk at 2 glasses or 2.5 glasses. Certainly by 3 glasses, I was slurring my words and drunk. So, you know, even if you're at the legal limit, you're still drunk. You know, at least I was. I mean, I was well, I think it was 0.05 and I was drunk.
Yeah, but how do you teach people, doctor, to slow down? A lot of people feel like they've got it under control, but they don't. And you're watching them like self-destruct and they're not slowing down. How do you teach them to slow down? And how do you teach them that, like, dude, you got to know ahead of time.
It's all education. Just like the videos I do, the TikTok videos. I mean, it's the education, and you're going to have a certain number of people who will listen. I mean, I've had so many people, parents and kids, who said, thank you so much. You know, I remember you talking about Brian, and I was at a party, and I was drinking, and I remembered your son dying, so I stopped drinking that night because I knew I had enough. It's just the education. You have to hope that some people take it to heart. You know, you're going to reach a certain amount of people who actually will consider it and drink less and think about maybe Brian, and there's other people who aren't ever going to pay attention. You know, you can't hit everybody, but you do the best you can.
Yeah, and the night that Brian died, it was also snowing and it was cold. I remember reading that about you, and when you arrived at the hospital, you were numb. Tell our listeners a little bit about that night, because, you know, a lot of people think they're hearing this and it goes in one ear and it comes out, but you went through a lot of emotions that night with your wife as well, and you had to think about the other children at home and how are you going to break this to them. And you brought the children to the hospital, is what I read?
We did. You know, my wife and I had gone there and met the trauma surgeon, and you know, I knew right when I saw him, he told us Brian was dead. And, you know, we started crying and went and saw Brian lying there dead on a gurney, and on a cold gurney, just lying there. And we had just seen him alive 3 hours before that. But then after that, we had to decide what to tell our three kids. So we went home and woke them up in the middle of the night and told them Brian was dead. And that was that's a scene I hope no parent ever has to see, telling your three siblings that your older brother died. But we took them back to the hospital because they all wanted to go and see him. They all had their different approach. You know, I mean, Kevin just stood there and watched, just looked at his brother lying there dead. And my other daughter went up very timidly and started to touch him and touch his hair. And I think they just needed to know it was like a finality for them. They needed to see it for themselves that Brian was actually dead, you know. It was horrible. It's a horrible scene.
Yeah,
there's no words I can put into it to describe you that night.
And it's also an awareness, too, I believe, because there are, I don't know how teenagers can afford cars anyway, like driving any place. So a mile is, you know, it makes sense to me that it was only a few dollars in gas. But even going out, it's expensive these days. So there are more house parties that are going on, and more things that adults need to, even though you're 18 or 20 years old, whatever, if it's happening in your house and you got people that are there that are drinking that aren't paying the bills, you need to pay attention to what's going on in your own house. And I remember, I'm the youngest of 9 kids, so I remember my parents breaking into, you know, like not break, literally breaking in, but like open, they never knocked. Like, and they used to tell us the same thing. They were like, this is my house. I don't have to knock on these doors. You know, I don't care about your privacy.
Yeah.
So, especially when we had friends over, because they wanted to see what was going on.
I think the biggest thing, too, is to use Uber and Lyft. I mean, our kids use it routinely, and we tell them, you know, charge it to our account. So, I mean, you know, if parents would offer their kids, maybe, you know, if you guys need a Lyft or Uber, you know, and just stuff like that. And there's simple things that people can do. And, I mean, they just have to make it, you know, make it acceptable for them and offer to pay their Uber form. It's better than having your child die, you know?
Yeah, and don't make them feel ashamed
and
make them feel
guilty.
Don't have a stigma attached to it either. So, Doctor, before you go, we just want to tell our listeners, we are speaking with Dr. Brian Hoflinger. He is an active neurosurgeon in Toledo, Ohio. Him and his wife, Cindy, who is a retired forensic pathologist, have written a book about their son, Brian, who passed away from drinking and driving. And we'd hope to put on our website how people could get your book as well. But, Doctor, there are so many people that go through losing a child and grief, and a lot of people can't handle grief. Did you find that you had a variety of resources available to help you and Cindy and the children? Because I know there are websites, there are support groups, there are books, online communities. What did you find was the most helpful to help you and your wife, Cindy, and the children?
Yeah, I think everybody's different. So for Cindy and the children, they went to counselor, and I think they still do counseling, and it's been a wonderful thing for them. And for me, I tried counseling. It didn't work for me. I was just able to, I'd like to do things on my own, and I've done well just dealing with it through my own means. So I everybody's different, but I think the counseling is a big part of it, because you got to get it out, right? Somehow,
yes.
You got to get it out. Maybe I got it out through my book and they didn't. So, you know, you got to get your emotions out. You got to get your feelings out. You got to talk about it with people you can't, because you feel so alone. When Brian died, we all felt so alone, like you couldn't comfort each other, because all you can think of is your agony and your pain at the moment. You can't think of anybody else. And somehow you have to get back to talking to other people and engaging. And that's the big thing, is just re-engaging. It's really hard to re-engage, you know, because you're so devastated. So yeah, I think talking to people, family and friends, counseling, those are all the right things to do. You read books about other people that have been through it, so you know you're not alone, so you know other people have gone through it. It just helps you relate.
Yeah, and I read somewhere where you had said that the life as you knew it with Cindy, Kevin, Christy, Julie, right, and Brian was over, and you now had right. to kind of have an unwelcome new life without right. Brian. So it's almost like your family had to now learn how to cope with a new life, but it in your words, it was sort of an unwelcome life.
Well, it is, and people, I mean, people don't mean anything bad by it, but so many people say, you know, you need to move on, you just need to move on, and they don't understand. You're not going to move on. It's you don't ever forget, and the pain never goes away. You just have to learn to deal with it, right?
Yes.
And that's what grief is. You can't just make it go away. You have to learn to incorporate it into your life and have a new life, and that's what I meant by that. I mean, our beautiful life with Brian that was perfect is gone, and this new unwelcome life came to us that we had to learn to live with, you know.
Yes. Well, we're so grateful that you're sharing your story and your son's story. I'm sorry that you had to go through this. No parent should have to go through this. And I hope that by you sharing your story with us and seniors and your community and all of us and your TikTok videos, my goodness, you had over 1 million views on one of those videos as well. You are making a difference and you are helping. And if you could just give us your website where someone can get your book, or maybe
sure.
Your website, The Family Foundation, we would really appreciate it.
Sure. Well, the book is called The Night He Died. The Night He Died. And our website is www.brianmatters.com. So Brian Matters is all one word. And you can get the book that avenue. And then, yeah, I do a lot of TikTok stuff. I think one of my TikToks, I think the one at Christmas about alcohol being metabolized, that is up to 19 million views, like 19.3 million views. So it reached a lot of people.
So important.
Well,
so important.
We're pulling it up right now, and Ellen will put that on our website. Well, Doctor, you're an inspiration,
okay.
and you're motivating me and Ellen and everyone in our studio to move forward and talk to teens about drinking and driving.
Yeah.
And I think one of the most important things to parents have to pay attention is don't ever have alcohol in your home with teenagers if you're not present. At least have an adult there to supervise and watch what the kids are doing, because I think this is the biggest mistake people make, is that they trust the kids to have solid judgments. And the children,
right.
they don't. At 18, you still need someone to supervise you.
Right. No, I agree. Those are all great points. But thank you. I enjoyed talking to you. I get to get back to seeing patients, but thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you so much. And we will make sure that all of the, not just your TikTok videos, but all of this will be shared on all of our social medias, and we'll have that downloadable MP3 available for you to share as well.
Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay. Have a nice day. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Wow, what a powerful segment. And we'll be right back with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We're just going to listen to our sponsors real quick, and then we'll be right back with more great guests.
Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9, that's cloud number 9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9.
Welcome Mattress to MedFast and Furniture. Urgent Care. We are Brevard County's largest urgent care network. MedFast is now open at 7:30 a.m. every day. That's right, 7:30 a.m. every day. We will get you in and out so you can get back to your day. When you are sick or injured, MedFast is here for you 7 days a week. Think fast, think MedFast. With 18 locations, there's a MedFast near you.
Are you longing for a taste of Louisiana? Lizette's Cajun Bistro is the place to be. They offer Cajun and Creole staples as well as American, vegan, and vegetarian options. The restaurant is located at 2447 North Wickham Road, Unit 146. All menu items are prepared daily from scratch and made to order. Dine-in or takeout as well as outside seating. Live music on selected weekends. So the next time you have a taste for Louisiana, stop by Lizette's Cajun Bistro, 2447 North Wickham Road.
Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads. 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000. Or visit them on the web at DixieCrossroads.com.
Jack Cross Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Choctaw Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Dear listeners, this is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. What a great first segment we had, Miss Ellen. We're so grateful to have someone like Dr. Brian Hoflinger call in on the show.
Yes, and 19 million hits on his TikTok video about alcohol and metabolizing alcohol.
Yeah, I have problems.
It was really, really
For some
good.
Reason, I have problems with saying that word.
That's
myself.
A big word.
I like break it up.
Yeah.
So our second segment is with Miss Candace Hartzler. For some reason, I was having problems saying her last name as well, but now I got it out. And she's calling in. she's an author, and she's calling in to talk about Theophthora the mouse. It's a little mouse. And, you know, I was researching her book, and I'm like, she has taken animals and made them so lovable. So I'm going to let her talk to our listeners about herself a little bit. So you, welcome to our show, and thank you for calling in from, are you also in Ohio?
I'm in Worthington, Ohio, yes.
Wow, must be a day for Ohio.
Yeah, I was looking at that, I'm like, wait a minute, the doctor is calling in from Ohio. He took time out of his busy practice to call us, and then I looked at yours, and I'm like, she's calling in from Ohio as well. So talk to us a little bit about yourself before we start talking about the mouse.
Cleopatra.
Cleopatra. You got some difficult names there, kiddo.
Cleopatra. Well, I'll talk about myself first. I have, I grew up in a very small town, and I had a lot of critters around me in my small town. I did not dream I would ever become a writer of children's books, though. I went to college and became a counselor. I majored in English literature, and then I went on to get a master's in counseling. So somewhere along the line, though, I started to write in my journal, and I started to write essays. And when I was in college, I wrote an essay about a mouse called Cleopatra. And that was when I was way young. I was in my early 30s when I wrote an essay about Cleopatra for an English literature class. And so the name stuck with me forever. And I just, 3 years ago, I started to write a book about her. So, I live on an acre. I have critters all around me. I love trees. I love animals. And I think it's more fun to write for children, for me, than it was to write for adults. I have written for adults. I have another book about addiction and families, actually. And this was much more fun to write. So that's what I do. I sit on my acre and I look at my flowers and trees and I watch the critters and I write stories for children.
What a great life.
Yeah, and this little mouse, it sounds so much like me. This mouse is feisty, smart, which my children might say debatable. Smart, bold, kind, loving. This little mouse is a determined little creature. So, when you were a child, did you have this mouse in mind back then or in college? How did you, because this mouse has all the characteristics that we want.
Oh, that's really a comical question, Sita. Yes, I think I was Cleopatra when I was a little girl. I just didn't know it. I have a very good friend of mine whose name is Jan, and she was one of the readers that I had for my manuscripts. And she just loved the story, and she said, Candace, do you realize that you are Cleopatra? And I go, oh, my gosh, I didn't know that. But I've always thought girls, or females in particular, need to take charge of their lives, and even if they tell us we can't, we need to try anyway, and that's what Cleopatra did. She had a dream, and her mother said, I don't think you can do that because that's not what mice do. Mice don't become ballerinas. We're too pudgy, and we have skinny legs, and I can't imagine you doing that. And Cleopatra said, okay, well, watch me anyway. So, yeah, she creates her own stage.
She had a mind of her own. She was determined to dance, and she did. I love that little mouse. But, animals are so important in children's books, right? I mean, we all remember Black Beauty. And I remember when I was a child, I read a lot of books about Brer Rabbit that was in from England. So did you always use animals for your books and your imagination? Or is it something that you just said to yourself, well, I'm just going to write about Cleopatra, but are there other animals that you think you could write about and bring them to life to help children to understand?
Yes, my dear, there are. As a matter of fact, right before I made the phone call to you, I was sitting at my computer. I'm writing a second Cleopatra book, and she is going to befriend a rabbit whose name is Begonia Bunny. And Begonia the Bunny is nearsighted. She can't see very well. And I'm not sure how it's going to evolve and unfold, but Cleopatra is going to let her know, yes, you can. We can figure this out. And she's going to somehow procure a pair of big pink glasses for Begonia to wear. So, I think children, in particular, the small generation of children, meaning, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years old, they have a lot, they come in here with a whole lot of spirit anyway. I think they're coming in here differently than maybe my generation did, but we want them to be able to know that, yes, you can, and all you need is somebody around you, near you, to say yes you can, and give you the oomph and give you the yes you can, and I'm going to show you how to do it, and it can happen. So yeah, I think animals have. If you watch what animals do in the wild or just in your backyard, if you have any access to animals at all, to watch what they can do, they get it done. Whatever it is they want to do, they get it done.
Yeah, they know what the word teamwork means, actually. But, I feel like Do you feel like using animals in storytelling enables authors to tell a powerful story while still maintaining emotional distance?
Oh, interesting. That's a very good question. And you know, maybe that is the truth, because I did not realize when I was creating the mouse, the Theopatra character, and as it continued to evolve and it unfolded kind of on its own, I didn't. I was very attached to the mouse being able to make it, but I wasn't necessarily emotionally attached to the story when I was writing it. But here's the deal. This is interesting, that your question, because when I had the illustrator, I asked four or five different artists, friends of mine, if they would just give me some samples of illustrations for the book after they read the manuscript. And when I got the illustrator that I ended up choosing, she sent me her first watercolor depiction of Theopatra, and I started to cry because that's just how I imagined Theopatra to look and to be, and I did not know that I was that emotionally attached to this little mouse until I saw the illustration. Then I thought, oh my gosh, I feel like I'm giving birth to Theopatra.
Yeah. I have children, right? And I know a lot of my friends have kids. And I found that a lot of parents would use animals to teach their children to count, to read. We use animals in the world around us. So it's only fitting that you used a little mouse, Theopatra, in your book to teach people how this little mouse was so determined to become a ballerina, and with the help of her friend, she believed in herself. So do you see that, like nowadays, if you see, I mean, people use like ducks to teach their kids to count, or you know, different animals they use, like we all remember Bambi.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Disney with Bambi.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Right, people learn from that too. So growing up, did you always feel as though the animals you had around you were inspiring and motivating you to think differently?
Well, they taught me how to love. They taught me how to play. They taught me how to be present with them. I always had cats, and my grandmother raised chickens. They became my pets. We had a dog when I was growing up. And I was a very quiet, introverted child, and so that I kind of went to the natural world, I think, to, you know, for solace and for imagination, for quiet, for to get out of the hubbub, you know, that my family was in some of the time. So yeah, I think I was learning all the while, and I think I was forming relationships with that world, of pets and animals and creatures and ducks and. I had a pair of pet ducks, Sarah and Sammy. I mean, there were always animals around.
Yeah, and why the owl? I mean, you rarely hear people speak about an owl, but you had the owl in your book. The owl was the cheerleader for Cleopatra.
You know, I'm not sure why the owl, although this is what I think, where the character came from. I have a granddaughter whose name, I have two granddaughters, Rosie, and Rosie's 17 now, and Lexi will be 10. And when Rosie was a little girl, we used to read a lot of books together, or I would read and she would read and we would talk about them. And she had a favorite series about owls. And I started to learn about owls, and I became fascinated about owls. And so I think they're beautiful creatures, and they're kind of mysterious. So I don't know. The owl just came to me, and it seemed like that would be an interesting little critter to fall from a nest and it be left alone, and then would need to learn how to do what its mother didn't teach it how to do. I don't know. And also, I want to make sure that I say something about my 9-year-old granddaughter, who will be 10 in August. This book probably wouldn't have happened had it not been for the pandemic. And she lives in Indiana, and she and I were talking every day on doing FaceTime. And so to listen to her, we were telling stories. And to listen to her imaginative approach to life, to in general, was, and I had to just hop to it, because my brain had to continue to click along with hers. So I think that's also how this imagination for the opening of the book for Theopatra and Harless came to be.
So for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with an author, children's author, Candace Hartzler. And Candace worked in the field of substance abuse and counseling for 33 years. And you say you're semi-retired. So are you fully retired now, or still a little bit semi-retired?
still a little bit, every other weekend I work.
Oh, okay.
A little bit semi, yeah.
Great. And I'm sure when you counseled people, you counseled a lot of people, it wasn't just children, you needed something to take you away to cope as well, because you've probably seen and heard a lot as well. 33 years is a long time to counsel other people about whatever you're counseling them about.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, and it really was an escape, and I've always been an avid reader. I've read books since I was able to read. So reading books that take me away from, that give me information about counseling and healing and therapy have been, that's been wonderful as well. But to read books to take me out of that and to find the imaginative ways to create wellness in me and to create, maybe give it away to other people as well, but to bring that solace to me and escape to me, it's been, it's been a lifeline, actually.
Yeah, and so you right, and you also won a prize for a poem, was it? Death of a Husband, that you wrote in Ohio at the Central Ohio Library
right.
Contest. So you found ways
right.
to cope away from your job. And did you know you were going to win, or you just entered on a whim and then you ended up winning? How,
no.
how did that come about?
It was on a whim. No, I had no idea. No, I saw, I think I saw something on Facebook about the Right Now Columbus Poetry Contest, and I thought, okay, well, why not? So I entered it, and yeah, there it was. I was really surprised by it, but it was a nice pat on the back.
Yes. And what a cool journey this is for you and your granddaughter, knowing that these are where these books spawned from, and now she gets to see this evolution of where the books are taking you and how it's moving into the next piece. And I also love the animal connection for many reasons, but I've read several books on, you know, when you see turtles, it means slow down in your
yes.
life, you know, how like animals appear in certain places.
Yes.
You know, if you see a snake, that means like you're going through a change, because you're, shedding light, you know,
yeah,
shedding
yeah.
the old skin.
Well, you know,
off,
Hinduism,
kind of
like snakes and
exactly.
elephants
yeah,
and
yeah.
animals, of course, you know,
all
Hindus are not supposed
yeah.
to eat meat, right? But we had a lot of connections with animals. And even like me, I use, when my granddaughter Maddie was little, I would say, if you don't eat your breakfast, Mrs. Wolf is coming. so then one day she's like, she was like little, and my daughter was like, who is Mrs. Wolf? So I went on Google and I said, show me a wolf. And this wolf came up wearing glasses with a little apron. So I said,
those little Red Riding Hood.
I said, this is Mrs. Wolf. So my granddaughter said, oh. So then I started using Mrs. Wolf until she was like 8 years old to do stuff. I'll make, Mrs. Wolf said to brush your teeth. Mrs. Wolf said to do your ABCs. And you know what? She developed a relationship with this imaginary wolf, and she would say, Nanny, is Mrs. Wolf coming today?
Oh, well, she'll never forget that either. That's a memory for her.
She doesn't. And so it's like a running joke now. I'll be like, Mrs. Wolf is coming. So tell us, do you have, what current projects are you working on now? I know you have another book in the works, and you're having fun
right.
with your granddaughter. So talk to our listeners a little bit about the new projects you have coming up.
Well, the second book about Cleopatra, that's on my, it's on my bucket list for this summer. I've been making notes and hearing Cleopatra talk in my head for the last 2 or 3 months, so I need to start writing things out and down now. I'm gonna try to have the second book out about Pagonia Bunny and Cleopatra in, I don't know, I'm not going to give myself an exact time frame, but I'm hoping to have the manuscript ready for illustrators to take a look at, in 6 or 7 months. But I don't hurry myself. I'm at the stage of my life where I need to let the creativity kind of evolve, and I'm also busy doing a lot of other things, so in the book.
Yeah, it's yeah. You're fading away. Are you near your phone? Are you on speakerphone?
I'm right here. Yeah, is it better now?
Yeah, that's better. So when do you find is your quiet time to write? Where do you write the
right.
most?
I write the most if I go to the library in the afternoon. I write in my journal, and I write other things in the morning when I first get up, and I drink coffee, and I look out the window, and I do my reflection and my that kind of writing in the morning. But when I'm writing on a manuscript, working on a manuscript, I need to get out of my house. And I can't fully understand that other than I find other things to do in my house besides write. So if I'm at the library in quiet space with my, and I write on a legal pad first, and then I bring it home and put it on the computer. If I can get it down on the legal pad and then bring it home and put it on the computer and then take it back to the library the next day and do editing and continue writing, that's my process.
So tell our listeners here in Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, what are some of the strangest things you've had to research while writing your books?
Oh, that's another good question. I spent probably a year and a half researching information about mice and owls. And I came up with all kinds of information that I probably didn't use, but I needed to know about, you know, what they were like when they were babies and what did they eat. And, you know, when it comes to the owls in particular, I needed to learn more about how a parent teaches a baby to fly and how often they eat and what they feed them and how often they feed them. So there was a lot. I spent a lot of time doing that. It was actually quite fun until I kept, you know, repeat information, because the information about owls in particular is just kind of, it's just the same wherever you look. Although the different types of owls and different, they have some different differences, but as far as feeding is concerned and the little feathers that they have when they're first born and the fluffy feathers they have between the real feathers as they continue to mature, and it was part of the fun, actually.
It almost sounds like you should make a video and teach us about owls, because a lot of people don't know this. I mean, you sound like you work in a zoo. You should be volunteering in the Ohio Zoo, because you know more than most people.
Yeah, that's sweet. That's very sweet. Well, it was a very fun project, I know that. So now I'm going to do, and I'm doing some research now about bunnies, since I'm going to have Begonia Bunny. I've been doing a research for a while before I've even started to write much of it. I've written some things down about bunnies. And I have bunnies in my backyard often, so I watch them, and I'm doing my own little research. So, but it's a very fun way to spend time.
So the bunny, that's a cute name, Begonia Bunny, and the bunny is nearsighted and wears pink glasses. Why do I feel that bunny is almost someone in your life? Because The bunny sounds like it's like a little girl or a little boy that you're trying to send a message to someone. Is that somebody that you know?
Well, you know, not consciously. I think she's going to be a she, but we're gonna see what the bunny wants to do and how the bunny wants to evolve. It's not a consciousness that I have about this Begonia Bunny. It's about someone that I know. But I think it's really hard for a writer to not write about something that she knows, whether she knows she's doing it or not, because we're forming a character, and characters are for, we know about people, and we know about animals, and making animals more human-like. So it's probably somebody I know or a combination of people I know. I do know that Begonia Bunny is going to be she's going to have a successful outcome in whatever she's trying to do, and she's going to hit some road, you know, some bumps in the road, and she's going to have to figure out how she's going to continue to evolve with the nearsightedness that she has, and she's going to make that a strength instead of that's something that's not a strength that she's embarrassed about.
Yeah, it sounds like that bunny is a cheerleader for wellness, growth, self improvement, motivation, and success. And I think I think that's what your books are about. Your books are about teaching people that to believe in yourself, reach for the stars, don't let anyone hold you back. And I think a lot of that is a combination of what you did in your life as a therapist as well, that you have taken all of that and you're putting it somehow into your books as well. And I think it's interesting.
Well, thank you for all that, because I agree with you. I think I've always been a cheerleader for humanity, and I certainly am going to remain that way until I'm not here anymore. That I think we need to do that for and with one another. That's what we come here to do, and we get all tangled up in other things, and we forget about what we've come here to do and to strive to become the best person that we can be.
That's my motto, right? Strive to spread joy and happiness throughout the universe every day.
Right, it's almost like, you're right, every day we wake up is a great day, right?
Every day, absolutely.
And, absolutely, and it is. Yes,
love
is.
Each other and yeah. disagree when we need to disagree and get back to loving each other.
Just give the That's world your best.
Yes, give the world your best. That's what we're supposed to do. And we don't have to always, we need to be kind. We don't always have to agree. That doesn't mean we're not being, that we're being unkind if we disagree. We're just trying to figure each other out. So
Candace, before you go off air, I would like for you to tell our listeners where we can find the books. And of course, there's going to be projects that are already in the work that are going to be coming to fruition. So let us know where we can find the books. Right. And I can tell that pretty soon we might have little bunnies and little owls and all kind of different things materializing from your neck of the woods in Ohio. So give us that website.
You will. Thanks for asking. You can find a book on TheoPatraMouse.com. You can find a book on Amazon. Bookshop.org carries the book. You can order it through Barnes & Noble online. And there are some local bookstores here in Ohio that are carrying the book.
So we're a little jealous here in Florida. We want you to describe your where you live one more time. Sitting in the yard with the beautiful greenery and the little animals running around. I mean, it just makes me want to get on an airplane and just come straight to Ohio. So before we go off air, just describe it.
Well, if today it's a damp, cool day, I'm looking out at my flower garden. There's a bunny that I just saw actually run from the pink underneath the green double swing in the flower garden, and it hopped around and it went over to the fence row where it's just a natural fence line full of a lot of green trees and bushes. And it's just a lovely, cool day. And when I finish here, I'm probably going to go to the library and then come home and take a long walk and watch the critters along the walk, because there's a lot of critters in the park that I walk in too.
Yeah, it looks like the library has become your place, you know, where you can excel on your writing habits. And I think that's beautiful, because Lord knows we need more people to partake in libraries and be grateful that we have them.
Yes, I agree, Sita.
Yes. Okay, well, I tell you what, Ellen and I are just thinking about that swing. I hope you take a swing on that swing for me, too.
That's right. And we're from Florida, so umbrella drinks are...
I will think about you both today.
Yes, and you know, look up our doctor who called in earlier, too, because he lives in Ohio as well. I don't know, you know, how far from you...
What was the doctor's name? Can you tell me the name? I will listen.
Dr. Hoeflinger, Brian Hoeflinger. He's a neurosurgeon, and his son passed away... from drinking and driving, and so he's got these videos on TikTok. Alan, how many views?
19 million views.
Yeah, so look that up. And I think it's great to make connections. Who knows? Maybe that doctor needs to come out and take a swing on our behalf with you and share his story
well,
as well.
Well, it's all about the messages we share,
that's
right?
Very and sweet. Well, my part-time job is working in a driver intervention program. So if somebody is driving while impaired and they're picked up, they can either come to this driver intervention program or they can spend time in incarceration. So
we'll send you the link to the video. We're gonna have to get off air now, but we'll send you the link to the video, because it's how alcohol metabolizes in the body.
I would love to read it. Thank you so much.
Thank you for being with us and sharing the airwaves here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Folks, we are here each and every Monday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on 1510 WBC and our three FM sister stations, 94.7, 99.9, and 100.7. We will see you next week with more great guests.